Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, August 16th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A 71-foot tender that sank southwest of Petersburg early Wednesday morning has leaked some fuel. During a helicopter flyover later that day, the Coast Guard spotted an oily sheen near the mouth of Duncan Canal. That's where the Pacific Queen sank. State officials monitoring the situation say a small amount of diesel escaped from the vessel, but they say fuel vents were secured before it sank, limiting the potential for a larger spill. The Coast Guard says the Pacific Queen had the capacity to carry 3,000 gallons of diesel, but the skipper told officials the tanks held only 1,000 gallons. A Department of Environmental Conservation situation report says the tender hit a rock before sinking. The skipper and two crew members were picked up by another fishing boat and taken to Petersburg. An oil spill response vessel from Juneau is on the scene. DEC says it's carrying 2,500 feet of containment boom plus oil skimming equipment. The ship sank near Lung Island, about 2 miles east of Cochise Bay, recognized as a sensitive environmental area. Officials say they're planning for a possible larger spill. The Coast Guard on Wednesday said the tender sunk in 40 fathoms of water, but state officials say the depth is unknown. The state lists Joseph Lycan of Wrangell as the Pacific Queen's owner. It was tendering for Sea Level Seafoods based in Wrangell. The company won't comment on the sinking. A playwright is spending the summer working on a project that could be of interest, literally, to everyone listening right now. Sarah DeLapp is melding the experiences of her sister at KNOM in Nome with interviews at KCAW in Sitka to write a play about a public radio station in Alaska. DeLapp is one of 7 Sitka Fellows, a residency program based at the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. Sitka Fellows are under 30 and all have launched promising careers as intellectual entrepreneurs. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Winter, a radio station at the end of the world. Squint through the 17 words for snow, and you'll see them. A hodgepodge of wide-eyed volunteers, Alaskan natives, and grizzly homesteaders sounding their voices across the tundra and the frozen sea.
This is not Sarah DeLapp. This is an actor reading an excerpt from Sarah DeLapp's application to the Sitka Fellows Program, where she describes how her play might begin. There's a bit more of Nome than Sitka in that opening, but DeLapp will be here through the end of the month, long enough for the rainforest to exert some pull. DeLapp is young, but her credentials are solid. She's been the artistic director of Yale's Experimental Theater Company, and she studied under Pulitzer Prize winner Paula Vogel. DeLapp is drawn to language, not just the patterns and cadences of speech, but what we say and don't say.
One of the most interesting exercises I've done is just like record a conversation and then write it out verbatim, and it's incredible how many things we don't say or we assume we say and just go unsaid, unspoken. We have very like fragmented conversations, which I find fascinating.
DeLapp reads a lot of plays. It's her job as the literary resident at Playwrights Horizons, an off-Broadway theater in New York. She had a play produced her senior year in college, but she says writing is just the first step. You have to send your play around to theaters, to festivals, and hope someone picks it up and reads it. With luck, you'll get to the next step.
So a theater will invite you in and set you up with a director and a cast, and then they'll read your play just like sitting around a table and maybe invite other people to come see it. And then hopefully, eventually, somebody decides to produce it. But it's a long, long road to the stage.
DeLapp's first produced play was Dark, a drama about three sisters who reunite to witness their father's execution. She intended it to be a dark comedy, but she says the comedy never really came out. DeLapp became interested in the theater in the usual way, in grade school. She remembers being in The Little Mermaid. She continued acting through school, but then a switch went on, and she felt compelled to create rather than to perform. Now she's steeped in the craft of playwriting. down to the smallest detail of producing a play.
I think as an actor, I felt that sort of like egotism of the actor of like, it's all about me. I can change this line if I want to. I can improve and ad lib a little bit. Now I find that like atrocious. That's like a sin. You can't do that. And the same goes for stage directions. A lot of directors will go through and cross out all of the stage directions before directing a play. And I find that that's just like anathema. You can't do that. That's like the heart and backbone of a play to me now.
Sitka Fellows spend 7 weeks in the community, living on the Sheldon Jackson campus, rubbing elbows with peers who may share some interests in common, but who really are there because they also are young and are also engaged in creating something. DeLapp's idea for her play took root long before she came to Sitka.
My twin sister, Eva, she has been working for the last year at a radio station in Nome, KNOM. And through talking to her and visiting her, spending a little time with her, and just thinking about the radio, I decided to write a play about an Alaskan radio station.
Radio is auditory, plays are visual. DeLapp doesn't consider it a stretch to develop a play about people who sit around talking. She considers it just the opposite.
That's rich. There's a lot going on there. It's always exciting to sort of pull back the curtain and see the other side, see what these people who are always scripted or who go between scripted and live mediums do when they're not on a microphone. I think there's a lot of overlap, actually, between radio and theater in that way, between, like, what is on the page and what actually happens when you're live.
DeLapp has met with staff at KCAW for their insight into the world of Alaska Public Radio. And like her play about the three sisters, she's tilting toward comedy. Let's hope she gets there.
There will be no executions. At least I don't think so.
Theirs is a story of pilgrims, rabid wildlife, manifest destiny, and above all, words. Today, words stretch across vastness. But in that valiant struggle to connect, to actually make contact, lies the human urge for intimacy.
DeLapp hopes to recruit local actors for a reading of her work in progress at the conclusion of the fellowship this month. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A couple of eagles from Ketchikan were sent to the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka last week, and both are recovering from whatever ailed them. But what that was remains a mystery. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Two adult bald eagles in 2 days were sent from Ketchikan to Sitka, and both birds had similar symptoms. The first was found near a creek on Gravina Island by a young woman. Jennifer Cedarleaf, avian rehabilitation coordinator with the Alaska Raptor Center, says the woman carried the bird to the airport.
I think she had a coat with her and she just put her coat on it, which is actually pretty brave considering I don't think she'd ever picked up an eagle before. And then she ended up holding the bird for like 2 hours or something.
The second eagle was found by a couple of hikers in the Carlana Lake area. They contacted Island to Island Veterinary Clinic, and one of the veterinarians collected the bird late in the evening with the help of some volunteers, held it overnight, and treated it before putting it on a plane to Sitka. Cedarleaf says both birds had higher than normal temperatures and were weak and dehydrated. Other than that, though,
we don't have any clue really what was wrong with them.
They gave the birds fluids, cleaned them up, and made sure they were eating properly before moving them into the main flight area. The center's veterinarian researched possible poisons the birds could have ingested, but Cedarleaf says nothing fit the symptoms. The birds didn't appear to have any injuries that would indicate they'd hit a power line either.
They're going to be too mysteries that we never really know what happened to them, but they're both doing well right now, and hopefully they'll be released before the end of the salmon run.
Both eagles have taken short flights since they were placed in the flight area, but remain somewhat weak and need more time to gain strength before they can be released. Cedarleaf says if they're not well enough by the end of the salmon run, the center will hold both birds until the herring run next spring.
We don't like to release birds that have been compromised when there's not a lot of food around and it's hard to find.
The center releases its birds in Sitka, no matter where they came from in southeast Alaska. Cedarleaf says eagles move around the region following food, and the birds most likely would find their way back to Ketchikan for mating season next year. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has asked bird hunters in Alaska's interior to hold off for up to 2 weeks. While the season for upland game birds looks promising, a late spring means chicks are small and family groups are sticking together later than usual. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
Alaska's home to 4 species of grouse and 3 species of ptarmigan. The season for upland game birds opened in some management units at the beginning of the month, but fish and game biologist Rick Marazon says hunters will do better to wait a week or two more before they head into the field.
All we're asking is that folks use good judgment. Right now, the family groups, particularly with ptarmigan, rock and willow ptarmigan, and spruce grouse, the family groups stay close together this time of year in late August and even into early September before the juveniles begin to disperse. And when the juveniles are only capable of flying, you know, a little ways, that the adults are reluctant to go very far.
Due to persistent snow and a late spring, Marazon says juvenile grouse and ptarmigan are smaller than usual.
So it would be fairly easy to be a pretty effective predator with these small chicks.
But this year's warm, dry summer and high insect populations mean the rate of survival for chicks is also high. Marazon says concerned hunters contacted him about this year's season.
In fact, I've heard from many hunters that have made similar observations that have told me they're going to hold off and that have encouraged us to encourage other hunters to hold off, or at least, you know, like I said, exercise good judgment.
ADF&G is also asking hunters to voluntarily provide a wing and a tail or head from harvested grouse and ptarmigan as part of a statewide population productivity study. In some game management units, the season for birds stays open through the end of May. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. It's currently 59 degrees downtown Sitka under overcast skies. Today in Sitka, expect patchy fog in the morning, showers becoming scattered in the afternoon, highs around 62 with southeast wind 5 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered showers with patchy fog late, lows around 54. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.